Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
How do you like Gotham so far?
Well enough.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 44 of the week of September 29th, 2014. I am Dancer with the Devil in the Pale Moonlight, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Cave Dweller Sarah D. Bunting.
Guano.
Caddywoman Tara Ariano.
Nice cowl.
And excessive foreshadower Nick Reinwell Jones.
Yeah, so in episode 8, we see Bane's parents have sex.
Back your titty.
I had to.
On that note, hello everyone. We are welcoming back a frequent contributor, Nick Reinwald Jones, to the program this week.
Hello. Hi, Nick.
Thank you for having me once again.
Before we get started on talking about Gotham, I want to remind listeners that the phrase that doesn't pay is still in effect. We have an all new one this week. And after you've listened to the whole show, please go to the forums and submit your guesses. And if you're the first to guess correctly, you submit the next one that we have to work seamlessly into our conversation.
Air quotes.
Speaking of things that aren't so seamless, Gotham.
We have Nick on because he will be covering it all season or as long as he can stand it on previously.tv. Do you think it will get canceled? I feel like they've spent so much money on it.
Well, I mean,
they
obviously they're making a big bet with it, but you just never know. I mean, because of the way like TV economics work, as I learned from listening to the panel in which you were a contributor, sometimes yes. Even, you know, no matter how much they're spending on it, if they end up getting too low of ratings where they have to start giving back free ad time, then it starts...
Right.
Getting canceled.
They bought the whole first 13, though. No?
Yeah, but even if they... Sometimes they'll do that and they'll still cancel.
Right, but you're talking about even if it's still a ratings dog, they might kill it.
Yeah. But so far it's not. I mean, so far it's getting good ratings, I think. Although, at least the pilot did, because obviously everybody was curious.
Mm-hmm. Are we curious to watch further than the pilot is the question. Dave, you liked it?
Sure. Well, I mean, the pilot was very pilot-y. And I think for me, the key is whether Gotham is going to be like a cop show set in a city where the bad guys like dress up in kooky costumes, then I'm in. But if Gotham is like a shoehorned Batman origin story, like not so much. And I have prequel fatigue.
Yeah.
I just like, you know, don't care that much to hear the backstory when the outcome is known. There's something about that that's just not... doesn't click in the same way as just having an open-ended story. So I'm curious which way they're going to go. I know that like Alfred is like a cast member, so I'm going to guess we're going to get more Junior Batman. It's just a matter of how much and how they deal with it. I think like in a perfect world, Gotham would have an expiry date and they would have the freedom to like skip ahead in years so that the Batman origin story sort of makes sense. You know, like it would be like he's 6 this year and next year he's 9 and then he's 13 and now he's 19 and, you know.
Definitely a show where faster. Time jumps would make sense.
Yeah, but if we just basically get a cop show set in a comic book universe, I kind of find that interesting. I kind of like the, you know, the gallery of villains they got going.
Well, yeah, I would say the, I mean, I agree with you. The pilot was very pilot-y. It was very network pilot-y specifically. I mean, you can, with a lot of network drama pilots, you can just feel like the studio executives and every executive's forcing in almost every major plot point, such that like the point of the thing is kind of lost. It's just like, here's the boxes we have to check, and you know, and the writers at a certain point are just like, fine, we'll just do whatever you want. And then in episode, I mean, episode two still usually has a lot of fingers on it, but I would say having seen the second episode,
and we should say at recording, we're recording Monday, so by the time this comes out, you may have seen episode two. But right in this room, Nick's the only one who has seen it.
Yeah, and not to give any spoilers, but I think episode two definitely feels more like what I was hoping the show would be like.
Oh,
great.
Oh, good.
And it is, tone-wise, it felt similar to like the Batman animated series that I liking.
People really like that.
And yeah, that's one of, like, if anything, that's been like more popular among like big comic book fans than the Christopher Nolan movies have been. But it has that kind of like a little more, definitely a little more arch than the Christian Bale movies, a little more having fun with who the villains are and stuff, and like dark, but also kind of laughing at the darkness of stuff. And I would say it's still, the cop show element is kind of like, is still not quite delivering. It's still basically like a hunch and some gunshots, and then they arrest a guy. But it seems like the closest like cop-ish show that it feels like to me is Justified, which I think is a good thing, because it's more weighted towards like the chaos of what's going on in the bad guy universe than and like what the good guy cops are able to do is kind of incidental. So, if it keeps going that way, I think it's got the potential to be interesting.
Well, and the villains are so much more interesting than Gordon is.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Like he's a dud so far in the pilot anyways.
That guy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how they're going to find a way to make him interesting, because that's supposed to be the point. Like he's the one good cop in Gotham, but
being a good cop doesn't mean being, you know, that one note. You know,
yeah,
like it doesn't need to, you don't need to, like the gruff, you know, by the book cop doesn't need to be that monotone.
No, it's such a bummer because like the Jim Gordon character was like the one thing that I kind of liked about the Christopher Nolan Batman movies, which I mostly thought were dumb and boring. I'm on the record as being like kind of against comic book adaptations in general. So, you know, take whatever my thoughts are with a grain of salt. But if Donald Logue's guy, what's his name, Harvey?
Yeah.
If he was the main guy, that would be so much more interesting, because he's so much more interesting. I mean, I guess they can't because, you know, he's so much older than Bruce Wayne. But, you know, why couldn't they have started with Bruce Wayne in his 20s or something?
Well, and again, you have the prequel problem where you know how he ends up. So if there was a question of whether Gordon would end up being crooked or not, then that would, you know, there would be some interest there. But, you know, he ends up being still a straight arrow. So,
yeah.
There's not that much they can do with them.
And given that you know, trajectory is known, it gives me hope that, as you say, we'll get the sort of villain-centric Justified take on things. And I think that's, judging purely by the pilot, is the strength of this show. Like, the Fish Mooney Penguin scenes are great. And, you know, I'm a little, I don't really know how the mob aspect is going to shake out, how interested I am in the, you know, the old guard, new guard mob power play, insofar as it deals with the non-comic book characters. You know what I mean? Like, what's his face? I forget the Mafia Don's name.
Carmine Falcone.
Thank you.
Played by John Doman of The Wire.
Yep.
Yeah.
Chain of Command.
But we'll see. We'll see on that point. But given that Gordon, you know, he's a known entity and he's kind of dull, the fact that I think we're going to see plots driven by the villains gives me hope that we're going to get more out of it than the pilot.
Sarah, you watched and loved Southland, which is the last thing where Ben McKenzie played a cop. How is he here relative to that?
Well, not good. And I was actually going to bring that up, because he played a sort of similar, like, straight-laced rookie at the beginning of Southland. And I feel like he takes a while to like learn as an actor. Like boring, not much range. These are like valid descriptions if you don't care for that kind of thing. But
humorless.
I think, yes, that too. But I think he's also like, he can't do much with bad writing. He's not one of those actors that can sort of, like, bend his perform or make the writing seem better than it is. So particularly in this pilot, which was like went through stylized and into constipated. And then Donald Logue is doing this like Max Grevy thing that I was just like, I hate this performance. Like I love these actors, but I hate this performance except Jada Pinkett Smith, who I usually hate. But she at least was like, hey, let's actually have some fun and try to entertain people. Like, gee, yeah, why don't we do that?
Yeah, she's the only one that seems to understand that she's in a comic book show. You know, like she was the only one who seemed to be having any kind of fun with it or make it seem at all natural.
Yeah, it's not based on the Bible, guys. Like, a smile now and then is okay. Like, there's probably not a giant flood coming and... Yeah, but I would say, like, I really like this cast, but it was like, this needs to get better fast, and they need to be, I think to Nick's point, like, you can see that there were a lot of notes on notes on notes and, like, a lot of goldenrod pages and, like, let's strap the camera to Mackenzie and have him run through
the restaurant
kitchen.
Oh, my God. Can we talk about that for a little bit? Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like that is proof that they've exhausted all the good ways to shoot action scenes and now they've gone into the bad ways to shoot action scenes. That's the first one.
Yeah. He's like some, your GoPro dog.
Yeah, it's like some quasi, like, Amazing Race type shot where they're like, hey, this works on reality shows, so why not?
Yeah, or, like, the challenge, like, really? Yeah. This is the one where you had the giant budget and that's what you do? Is helmet cam?
You called it out so well in your post about the first episode, Nick, too, where it was like, and it's every cliche of a chase scene in a big city. Like, it really was all of them. I thought you might be joking, even though I edited that post and, like, I saw all the pictures. I knew you didn't make them.
Yeah, no, there was
them.
A fruit cart. I couldn't believe it. Like, wow.
All you needed, well, then you could have, they could have thrown in the Jerry Bruckheimer element of, like, the cooks in the kitchen saying some, like, ethnic stereotype.
Right,
while they're running through,
Let that perfectly good white boy run through here, totally.
But yeah, I mean, that's my...
But I think that everyone was also directed, if they were directed, with a similar, like, eye towards getting the network to just go away. Like, let's do this and make it as broad and simple as possible, and then, you know, either the actors were left to their own devices or they were directed in this very, like, stodgy, annoying way that even actors that I love and will watch in anything, I was like, yuck, like, I'm actively annoyed. It's not just boring, it's also annoying.
You know, you're speaking about Justified earlier, and don't forget, Justified season one, it started off very procedural.
That's true.
And
then by the numbers,
they sort of did this stealth introduction of, you know, the underworld as a key focus of the show. And maybe I'm giving too much credit, but maybe the people of Gotham are, you know, doing something similar where they are trying to introduce the show as a comic book story, but broadly so. And then as they move along, and I would, you know, say hopefully get good ratings, then they can kind of make it a little bit more of the animal they wanted it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think to the creators, it's an opportunity to tell the kind of story they want to tell through the lens of the Gotham universe. And to the network, it's a chance to bring in a ton of eyeballs because it's Batman stuff.
Right.
And so you have the network trying to say, like, please ladle on as much, like, known Batman elements as possible, because this is what's
it's, I mean, Poison sure Ivy, she's a little girl.
I mean, I'm sure there was conflict about how much to use Bruce, and I'm guessing that, like, that having Bruce in there at all is really, like, a network decision, because of course he's not interesting to the story at this point, and he's not necessary. Like,
what did you think of the Alfred characterization?
Obviously very different from Michael Caine, so that's going to be take some getting used to. But
didn't he say get your ass down from there? Wasn't that a line? Yes.
He's much more
I think he was like you imagine he was a bruiser in his like he could have been a boxer, could have been like a low-level street gang member in London back in the day, or
and
something
maybe
like
he was like a butler / bodyguard when the Wayne parents were still alive,
right?
Or something.
I'm interested to see what I bet we're gonna get. I count down to the first Alfred centric episode. I'm gonna say episode 8.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have the
I'd go
Alfred
sooner.
Thing.
I'd go 5, and I hope I'm right, because I'm into that guy.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're going to keep watching. I mean, Nick, you have to, because we're making it.
I'm interested.
No, honestly, it does, like, it gets better. I think the second episode is much better to judge it on than the pilot. It still feels like, you know, they've got some kinks to work out, but it definitely, like, they just... the second episode is where they start having more fun with it.
And you know these guys are going to have more runway to deal with their issues than other shows because, you know, it's there's a reason they got a bigger commitment out of the gate, you know, Power of Batman.
So. Yeah, and I mean, I'm still, like, it always bums me out that the way that they can do interesting stories on network is to make them some kind of cop procedural.
Yeah.
And that's how they're doing this one. But like, it's, I still feel like if you're going to do it, make it a good, make the police work interesting. And so far they haven't, even in the second episode, they haven't really done that. It's just like, oh, they kind of stumble onto the crime scene. And
well, you know, yeah, that was the thing about the shoes where he's like, he doesn't own any
shiny
shoes. Like,
shoes.
He couldn't have thrown his shoes away after he committed a crime in them. Do I have to do everything?
Yeah. I mean, that again, it was something like, The network was probably like, no, you need something very obvious. That, and they're like, fine. How about the bad guy has shiny shoes?
Yeah.
Yes, great. Go with that.
But that
okay,
was like
fine.
Play school crimes. Yeah, I mean, SVU is pretty dopey these days, too. But it even they wouldn't do that, I think.
Yeah.
So maybe, I hesitate to say that, but so far, no.
So maybe fast forward 5 years, Sarah, we get like a Harvey Dent Law & Order style spinoff from Gotham.
Hmm. You know, I'm in.
Yeah.
What I really hope is that they look at their like night mate Sleepy Hollow and look at, I mean, you know, I understand that there's a lot of pressure to do right by this particular franchise, but Sleepy Hollow says that Benjamin Franklin was like a Masonic nudist and cast Timothy Busfield.
Yeah.
Like, find
really?
The fun. It's not a but. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Sleepy Hollow.
Do I have to start watching this? Do I have to start
fuck.
Watching this? Sarah, do I have to start watching Sleepy Hollow? Is it like stupid
do.
Fun?
Yeah,
yeah,
it is.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. It's like all the, whenever Fringe was just like, fuck it. It's
yeah.
the same.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And John Noble is in it, too. I forgot to tell you that.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. All right. I'm going to watch.
Yeah,
we'll watch.
I'll report back. Too, yeah.
We'll watch tonight, and then Dave can report back on Around the Dial maybe next week. Let everyone know how he liked it.
Speaking of Around the Dial. And speaking of superheroes, today I want to talk about another television ad, and that is the one for The Flash. I saw a billboard for The Flash, maybe it was on the side of a bus, and The Flash is running down some main street in some city, and he's doing that, you know, lightning bolt zigzag. And I'm just saying, if I am going to put my money down on a superhero whose power is to get wherever he needs to be as quick as possible... Shortest distance between two points, straight line Flash.
Yeah, but maybe he's so fast that to go in a straight line, it would be dangerous. That's why he has to break it up.
Oh, Tara. Can
I ask a question about the actual Flash?
Sure.
He got his powers from being hit by lightning, yeah?
Oh, did he?
Lightning Flash?
I don't know.
I thought someone took a Flash picture
of him. I'm asking.
I don't know.
Because maybe then it's like an homage to his mother or father.
I think he was bitten by a radioactive rabbit.
Radioactive Flash bulb.
Cheetah.
Sarah, that sounds right.
The same day. That's what gave him his super fast.
It's still a terrible poster, though, because you can't see, like, you know, put someone's face on that thing. Like, it's not interesting or grabby.
I'm just saying.
I'm someone in the know that the show is really good. So.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Nick.
Also, going along the same theme of TV ad campaigns, the one that's really been sticking in my craw is Chicago PD, where the tagline is, break the rules, not the law.
What?
Okay, so let me just ask you, the rules that govern the behavior and conduct of a police officer, is that or is that not known as the law?
Now we're getting into the tricky area of legality versus lawfulness.
Maybe not in Chicago.
What rules would they be talking about that would not be within the law? Like, don't microwave fish in the office?
Dress code?
At them. They don't care about anything. He's not wearing
black
a tie.
Black shoes, brown belt.
Yeah,
Stacey Clinton said that one's okay.
That one just doesn't. I almost want to watch it to see what exactly that means. Like, we're totally staying within the law, but we're breaking the rules.
That's bad.
Of Jenga or something.
But the NBC's attempt to turn Wednesdays into Woman Crush Wednesdays is even worse. Have you seen this ad?
No, I have not.
It's like it's Mysteries of Laura Deborah Messing, SVU Mariska Hargitay, and Chicago PD Sophia Bush. Is that her name?
Yes.
Yes.
In a firing range. And they're like making them look all sexy and stuff, like the women solving crimes on Wednesday. It's Woman Crush Wednesday, which, first of all, Woman Crush sounds terrible. Sounds like a kind of porn.
That is the worst soda ever.
Or like, She-Hulk, Woman Crush Wednesday.
I know they're all in their 30s or 40s, but you can say girl crush. That is at least a phrase.
Or, yeah, as a friend of mine pointed on Facebook, just crush.
Yeah.
Just crush on him.
Mm-hmm. Not,
but
not
don't, because Mariska Hargitay, really? I mean, she's very beautiful, but Liv is so annoying to me now that I just can't even.
She was really terrible in that premiere. Holy crow.
Oh, God, she really was.
Is Sarah Bunting.
What on earth is she doing here?
In the Downton Abbey premiere, which we flew to England to watch, Sarah Bunting gets invited to a party, and some people are not happy that she is there. Sarah.
Sarah Bunting should actually have talked about how her vanity Google search is like pinging her five times a day, and it's all like British reviewers complaining about Sarah Bunting.
She has really cute hair this season, though.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. It's much cuter.
All right. There's my segue into The Good Wife. Good hair. Nope. Not really. I'm really afraid that they're going to make Alicia run for office, and I really, really super extra don't want it. I love Eli. Find something else for him to do. Mm. Am I right?
Yeah, I don't really want her to run either, but I enjoyed this episode. That plot line in last night's episode was fun to me, where she had to keep going to different places and being like, I'm not running! Especially when she finally goes to Castro's office and he's like, I didn't do any of this, what? Because I just like that actor. But I would also see her stomp him, because he's such a dick in this role.
And it's so weird to see him in it, like out of his observer, like pale greenish gray makeup drag. Like, he doesn't actually look that different, but he looks kind of like he's this newborn pink weird baby. And yeah, it's messed up.
He was on the Nick.
I really
last
enjoyed
weekend.
That plot line, but I just don't like when Robin, who I also love, is like, well, the only reason there's a conflict is if you're actually thinking of running. And Alicia is like cartoon style zigging her eyes back and forth, and I'm like, girl, please, no. Also, is anyone else shipping Lamond and Kalinda?
Yeah.
Laminda?
Yeah. He's divorced, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm into that. Better them than her and Carrie. I'm so sick of Carrie.
Oh, God. Seriously.
He could have stayed in jail for all I care.
Yeah. I totally agreed with your particle on that point.
Thank you very much. How to Get Away with Murder is kind of good. We watched the premiere last week. Viola Davis is completely amazing. And I like how mean her character is to everyone she meets, literally. I hope that there's a way to pull the focus partly away from all the nerd law students, because fuck them.
Especially Wes.
Especially all of them. Yeah, the main guy with curly hair, right?
Yeah, no.
The waitlist guy, yeah. I don't get what his whole, like, you know, knock-kneed fawn in the woods act is about, but the rest of them are all just douchey, and I don't care about them going to law school. I realize it's set at a law school, so this is maybe my problem, but it really should just be all about Viola Davis being sneaky and getting people off and having sex with hot cops in her office.
Yeah, African-American house off, so. Of the law.
Yeah, anyway, I'll keep watching. I thought it was fun. Dave, what did you think?
I enjoyed it. I will admit I was multitasking during the episode, because I was
playing that soccer game on his iPad.
Soccer physics.
But
first of five wins.
And he also complained it was too dark for the few times that he glanced up to look at it. The lighting was really bad.
It was.
I know.
Anyways, I was paying half attention, and I may have not grokked flash forward, flashbackness of the crime and everything like that. So it was a bit confusing for Dave at first, but I did enjoy the performances, and I am intrigued, and I will continue to watch, and I hope it gets as bonkers as Scandal did, and then then it'll get so stupid I can feel good about not watching or watching. You know, that's what I like about those shows. It's sort of like there's a point where you're like, "Wee, this roller coaster is so fun. Do you want to go again? Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Let's get a bite to eat first, and then we'll go to the shooting gallery, and then maybe go to the fun house, and then we'll see. Maybe the roller coaster again. Maybe not.
I'm still watching Scandal, but it's true. Like, season four is kind of like that. You're really pushing people's patience with how much they're willing to tolerate. I mean, everyone on Scandal is a murderer at this point, maybe except for Olivia. Honestly.
Yeah.
I think everybody has killed someone now.
Yes.
Crossover event.
Yeah.
So that's
and
why
the murder victim is Quinn every week.
Yeah, that would
they
be
should
amazing.
Just give her, as they're doing, like a new show every 2 or 3 years as she burns off, you know, the oldest one, you know, as it goes into, you know, insano land even more than we can handle.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, this is the point where we usually play the face-off report, but we have a little note, Tara. Please explain.
So this week's face-off was all about the artists. They, I guess before they came on the show, they had to fill out a questionnaire, including asking what their biggest childhood fear was. And so this challenge had them do scary clowns, but clowns that integrated whatever their childhood fear was. So there were things like dark water, you know, monsters under the bed, creepy old dolls, spiders, etc. So,
but it was not so much, I think, the output. People explaining
at
the start how, like, scary these things were to them when they were kids.
So there's a lot of, like, each of the artists gets a chance to explain, like, what the thing was that they were scared of and why it scared them in a lot of detail. And as we were watching this, I turned to Dave and went, I don't know if Liv should watch this part. Like, just the stories were so creepy, even though the artists were, like, you know, totally cheerful and making jokes and stuff. It's like, she's six.
You put that idea in a six-year-old's head.
She doesn't need extra nightmare fodder like that never occurred to her
before.
It's
like the time I let my, like, 5 or 6-year-old nephew watch Gremlins because he wanted
good
to.
Job, Dave.
I'm like, yeah, sure, fine. Knock yourself out. And he didn't go to sleep for like a month.
So I warned Leah. I said, you might want to watch this one by yourself first and just, you know, vet it and see if you think it's okay for Liv to watch it. And she did watch it and decided, maybe not. However, the reveal involved all of the makeup models this week were all actual clowns getting this clown makeup put on. So they did a big, like,
show.
Circus-y performance on the reveal stage, which was really fun.
Yeah.
So Leah let her watch that. Now we may proceed.
Hi, Livvy.
Hi, Mom.
So we did not just finish watching episode 10 of Face Off, right?
Right.
Why not?
Because you said it was too scary for me.
It's a little scary. But we did talk about what the challenge was. What was the challenge?
They had to make clowns based on what they were scared of when they were little. And they had to make sure the makeups didn't come off during the show that they did at the near the end.
Yeah. And I let you watch the show, though.
Right.
And what did you think of that?
It was awesome.
Is there anything that you're afraid of?
Sharks, crocodiles. I don't like those things because they can eat me.
Yeah.
And I don't want to die.
I don't want you to die either. Can you tell everybody who the winner was?
Sasha.
And her clown
looks like a doll.
Yeah, she made kind of a porcelain doll clown. And they were very happy with her because she took a risk, which is something that happens on that show a lot, right?
Right. But what risk did she do?
Everybody else was making clowns that look like regular clowns, and she made a doll that had clown painted face. So they were impressed with her work. And who was the loser?
Damien.
And what was his fear? What did his clown have on it?
Spiders on the face?
Yes. So his, they didn't like his because it looked a little too much like the Joker from Batman.
Okay.
Well, I'm sorry that you didn't get to watch this week's episode, but I'm really happy with how well you took that.
Thank you.
And we'll talk about the next episode, because I checked, and the next episode you can totally watch, so you don't have to worry about that.
What is it?
Oh, you'll see. Talk to you later, Livvy.
Dun, dun, dun. Goodbye.
It's So we got that. And then a few hours later, I got an email from Liv's mom that's saying she really, really, really wanted to know and let you know this.
Were you scared by any of the clowns that you saw?
Not really.
Not even a little bit?
No.
She just wanted to make sure we knew she wasn't scared.
All right, everybody, get ready. This is our last opportunity of the season to get this right. Here we go.
Everyone in this room is now
Domer.
Having listened to it.
That was the best almost perfect. All right, Tara, take it away.
Well, this was the season finale, as Dave mentioned, of Under the Dome. It still hasn't been renewed to my knowledge. I pray this is the series finale.
Oh, I wanted to continue so we can keep on doing this.
No!
And Tara, all your hate. Oh, the hate is swelling within you.
So here, all of it was dumb. But the dumbest thing that happened in this episode was the dome is contracting, as I believe I mentioned, on two axes. Everyone's figured out this, it's squishing. There's all these crazy weather things happening. No one can explain. So they decide, let's all go underground while these earthquakes are happening periodically. And why should we do that? Because some kids went down in these chasms and they saw a butterfly, so therefore that means it's great. Okay, let's go! The whole town, which now at this point seems to be about 35 people, judging by how many extras they cared to pay in North Carolina for this one scene. They're just like, what? I mean, I sort of get it. Like, at this point, even if you die underground, you're probably better off than if you were above ground, maybe about to get murdered by Big Jim. But it also seems like a weird tactical choice to go to. Anyway, the end of the episode is Melanie, who got sucked into a hole that suddenly appeared, a giant suck hole, as Nori called it in the previous episode, is alive. She appears from behind a wall of rock and butterflies, stay with me, and tells everyone, come with me, we're going home. I hope that means to heaven or hell, and that will be the end of my torment.
All right, everybody, that means it's time for the canon. Nick, what do you got?
So, I am presenting this TV show called Episodes on Showtime. This is Season 3, Episode 9, creatively titled Episode 9. So, to give a quick overview, since this is a show that I think has flown under some people's radars, Episodes is a show about two British TV writers, Sean and Beverly, a married couple, who co-created a very successful sitcom for the BBC, and it's a very, very British show about the headmaster of a private boys' school. But for some reason, the president of an American TV network thinks it would make a great American show. And so he lures Sean and Beverly to Los Angeles to come and do an American version of it. And Sean is kind of taken in by the glitz and glamour of Hollywood, so he's pretty into the idea of this. But Beverly is really not into it, does not want to leave London, and doesn't want to deal with all the bullshit that she imagines Hollywood to be. And she is eventually proven right. Of course, it's a disaster pretty much from the beginning, exemplified by the fact that the network insists on casting Matt LeBlanc in the main role, which on the original show was played by a veteran British theater actor in his 60s. And the premise of the show gets completely changed. It becomes a wacky sitcom called Pucks about a horny hockey coach who keeps trying to hook up with a sexy librarian. And even then, the show ends up struggling the ratings. The network is threatening to cancel it, insists on more changes. Matt LeBlanc has some personal issues that get in the way of things, and everything just keeps getting worse. So here's where things stand at the end of the third season when this episode takes place. The show has been canceled due to horrible ratings. Beverly and Sean are ready to move back to London, and they're both pretty relieved about it at this point. And Matt LeBlanc is already being courted for this hot new NBC drama. And so it's just looking like this could be the end. Except for one thing. A few weeks prior, Sean was cold called by this hotshot agent who found an old pilot script that he and Beverly had written, which was never produced, and the agent loved the script and wanted to show it to an executive at Fox. And Sean gave her permission to do that, unbeknownst to Beverly. He thought nothing would come with it. But what actually happens is that Fox loves the show and wants to produce it, and then Sean and Beverly's own network gets a hold of the script, and they're pretty interested in it as well. So that's where this episode starts off. And Carol, the network executive who's been working closely with Sean and Beverly this whole time on Pucks, has come to see them to try to convince them to stay in LA and do this other show.
I just want to have a conversation.
Right. And what happened to the conversation where we agreed we would never, ever have this conversation?
That was before Castor saw your script.
Oh, he saw it.
I swear, I didn't show it to him.
That's the octave you usually lie in.
Honest. He was snooping around my desk. He saw it and read it and, hello,
He loved it.
Really?
Loved it. Of all the things I've shown him, it's the only one he wants to do.
So you did show it to him?
Oh, so what? I had to. My job is on the line. He hates everything. Your thing? He doesn't even want to shoot a pilot. He wants to go straight to series.
I like the sound of that.
I don't. That just means we get to skip limbo and go straight to hell.
Okay, how about this? What if we just buy the show from you? We'll hire someone else to run it. You won't even have to be here.
No, no, no. It's our show. If anyone's going to run it, it'll be us.
Well, you know I'd love that.
Forget it. We're going home.
To do what? What are you going to do when you get there? Try to get another show on? And even if you do, you'll make, what, 6 episodes of something no one will ever see?
Well, England.
Exactly.
So that exchange is kind of a good microcosm of the entire show, as we have Beverly wanting no part of this, Sean being intrigued and allowing himself to be lured back in.
Carol lying her face off.
Yeah, and Carol doing a great job of shit-stirring, as she always does. She's just such a great character.
I love her.
In my experience, extremely accurate portrayal of a Hollywood personality type, because she really becomes close friends with Beverly and like feels genuinely close to her, confides in her, asks for her advice, and yet she never sees anything wrong with lying to her or going behind her back if it'll get her what she wants, and this is another case where she's done that. And Beverly is obviously annoyed with her, but really shouldn't be surprised at this point. So after this scene, we move on to a big meeting at the unnamed network, where Carol's boss, Castor, who was previously mentioned, he's the head of programming, is presenting ideas for the new fall season. And ever since this character was introduced, we've seen he's good at appearing smart and decisive and creative, except he's just completely insane, does a good job of hiding it. He was probably my least favorite character this season. He was just too wacky and broad of a character, but
yes.
At least he gets a great final scene right here where he demonstrates that it is in fact possible to think too far outside the box.
From now on, we program anything at any time. Comedy, drama, reality, mix it the fuck up. Maybe one night, 4 hours, all about bees.
Bees?
Bees! The next day, people will be all, did you see that fucking thing about the bees? The sheer balls of it!
Help me out here. What are the bees doing? Are they funny bees? Are they killer bees? Do they have a talent?
I don't know. Who gives a shit? They're bees. They'll do whatever bees do. The point is, people are going to tune in to find out what the hell we're doing next. It's total water cooler. Oh, and everything's live.
The bees are live?
Maybe. How fucking great would that be? People, you got to throw away the rules. Like, who says one show has to end before another one can start?
How do you... Wait, what now?
Okay, say you're in the middle of some cooking show. This woman's cooking and cooking, and all of a sudden, the bad guy from one of our dramas runs in with a fucking gun and holds her fucking hostage. Meanwhile, she has no idea what the fuck is happening.
The actual woman from the cooking show doesn't know?
Right! She's like, what the fuck is happening? And people are tweeting and twittering. You got to watch this. Turn it on. Turn it on. Then one of the cops from the drama runs in and shoots him. I mean, actually shoots him.
We're shooting one of our actors?
So we'll have to pay him more. You know there are actors who'll do it. So we shoot him, then the police run in. The real police. And it's news. Then we cut to our news guy. That's when our news show starts. We make the news, then we report the news. And no one's going to report it before us because we're the only ones who know what's going to happen. It's TV for a new century. And that's why they're going to watch us and not the other guys. How about that, my zombies?
And then there's a great little button on this where we immediately cut to Castor's office being cleared out, and the network president, Elliot Salad, sums everything up.
So he was crazy.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, Matt LeBlanc is over at NBC, and he's meeting for this hot new drama that they want to put him in. They're told him that he doesn't even have to audition, the part's just his. Except, of course, when he gets there, he does, in fact, have to audition, because it's really between him and this other actor, and the network wants him to prove himself, and he decides he's had it. He's done. He's not doing the show if they're going to jerk him around like that, and later on, he meets Sean and Beverly for dinner and tells them what he did. For once, Beverly really admires him, and then, in one of the best inside baseball speeches in this show's history, I think, which is saying a lot, he just explains what he's gone through and how the whole network casting process works.
Here's what's going to happen. Right now, they're telling each other they didn't want me in the first place. Then they'll offer it to some big movie guy like Nicolas Cage, who you know isn't going to do TV, but he'll jerk him around for a while, then come back and say, he won't do TV. Then they'll go to, like, some big Broadway star who nobody's fucking heard of, and he won't want to leave New York, which only makes them want him more. So They'll offer to shoot it in New York, but then the Broadway guy will decide he doesn't want to do TV. Then they'll just give it to Dylan McDermott.
And that's why I want to go home.
Dylan McDermott is starring in the new CBS show Stalker, so feel free to draw your own conclusions.
Yes, I watched it. It is terrible.
Well, good job, British theater actor, for turning it down. Sean and Beverly's phones ring almost simultaneously during this, and they get into a frustrating four-way negotiation with Carol and Eileen Jaffe, the agent who's been shopping them around. But Matt convinces them to just shut it down, say no, walk away, and like he did, and that's what they do. They just hang up. And then, of course, his phone rings, and it's his agent telling him that NBC backed down, and the part's his after all, that he can have the show with no audition. Later that night, Sean and Beverly are finishing up their packing. Their car to the airport is arriving in a few minutes. They've continued to say no to every network that is chasing them down, and they're really leaving. Prior to that, they run into Merk Lapidus, the network honcho who brought them to LA in the first place, and they tell him about Pucks being canceled. He claims to have loved it, which he did not. And they tell him that Matt's moving on to star in this new NBC show. And Merk tells them three of them should work together again, and he's an independent producer now. He can shield them from the network and stuff. From the assholes at the network, as he refers to it, which is, of course, exactly what he used to be. So Sean and Beverly finish packing up their stuff. They're waiting for the car to take them to the airport when Carol shows up. And she says that she's just there to say goodbye, but we'll see.
I'm going to miss you so much.
I'm going to miss you too. Really am.
Susan Sarandon read your script.
What?
Oh, God. I wasn't going to say it. It just popped out.
Let go of me.
Don't be mad. She read it and really wants to do it.
Susan Sarandon. I love Susan Sarandon.
And she loves the part. She's never done a series. She said this is what she's been waiting for.
Come on, Susan Sarandon.
Oh, please. You know by the time they're done with us, it's not going to be Susan Sarandon. She's just saying Susan Sarandon today. Oh, look, a carrot. But once we're in, it's, oh, sorry, Susan can't do it. But you know who we can get? Someone shitty who's totally wrong for the part. You watch, it'll end up being this cup. She'll ring us up one day. Hold for Carol. She'll be all, you guys. Wants to do your show. This is huge. The cup turns down everything. And we'll be, the cup? And she'll say, seriously? You don't know the cup from Where's My Saucer? And Me and the Spoon. Yeah. And suddenly we'll be doing a show starring a fucking cup who you just know is going to want to make lots of very cuppy changes because it needs to make it its own.
So that situation escalates, and Eileen Jaffe shows up again as well, bearing the news that CBS is now in the mix. And there are three networks competing for Sean and Beverly, but Beverly realizes at this point something very important, which is that this is actually the best time for them to leave. It's the only time they'll ever be on top and in control. The moment they say yes to anyone, they've lost. And Sean finally agrees, and they really do walk away. Except for one thing. Merk Lapidus, now who they've run into, runs into Elliot Salad, the network president, at lunch, and tells him what they told him about Matt LeBlanc doing the new show for NBC, which, as Merk points out, would not look very good for that network if they canceled Matt's show and then he went on to have a hit series at a competing network. So Elliot takes this advice to heart and heads for Carol's office.
Elliot, hi.
Have we officially canceled Pucks?
No.
You sure?
The paperwork's still here on my desk.
Pick it up for six more.
Wait, you want to pick up Pucks?
Today.
But you hate Pucks.
I hate NBC more.
That is Hollywood in a nutshell. We will never know how many shows or movies have just happened out of spite, but I imagine it is most of them. So now everyone's screwed, and Matt can't do his NBC show. He's technically still under contract to do Pucks. And as the episode draws to a close, Sean and Beverly are happily enjoying a rainy night in London when Sean's phone starts ringing. The end. So I love this show. There have been a lot of clever inside baseball shows and movies about Hollywood, but in terms of being both funny and accurate, I think Episodes really does it best. It's also one of the best instances I can think of an actor playing themselves, which, again, there's a lot of examples of it, but very few good examples. Matt LeBlanc just really nails it, obviously with a big assist from the creators, one of whom is David Crane, who wrote from all those years on Friends. So obviously knows him very well. And I only learned this recently, but also it's really cool that Stephen Mangan and Tamsin Grigg, who play Sean and Beverly, had already started up as each other on another British show. So they
Green Wing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So they already had, you know, you can just tell that they have great chemistry right from the start. And then that also is, in turn, is helped by the fact that David Crane and Jeffrey Clarke, the co-creators of the show, who also write every episode in the British style, are both creative partners and life partners. So they really know what they're speaking of here in terms of having a dual relationship. Yeah. And so all these elements that make the show real, I think, are make it funny and let them go to some absurd places and usually get away with it. Not always, but... so even if this wasn't the strongest season of episodes for some reasons, like the Caster character that I think was a good thing that they got rid of him, it went out on a high note. I'm excited to see where they'll go from here. I like that this particular episode was really packed with plot. There's a lot of ups and downs contained within a half hour and a lot of really hilarious individual moments and scenes that I think represent the series at its best. And I think this episode deserves a spot in the canon.
Yeah, this was a really good pick. I agree with you about Caster. And I feel like this was the season where episodes really kind of clicked into the kind of show it was going to be. A lot of, I sometimes felt that the previous seasons, I mean, I don't have the experience that you do, but that felt like, it was a very generic portrayal of like the typical horrible things that would happen to you on a production. But this season, it felt like this episode, especially like that scene, the speech that Matt LeBlanc gives that you had the clip of, that's exactly what the show should be. Like, I feel like someone was like, look, no one is really watching this. It doesn't get a lot of buzz. Let's just like go for it. And then someone was like, all right, there has to be some kind of broad comedy element in it to grab the people that don't care about those stories. And that's how Caster was born. But the thing about his speech is that it starts out kind of smart, his big, you know, swan song.
Yeah, you're with him up to a point. Yeah.
He's not wrong. Like, when he's talking about how people have less and less of a concept of, like, when a show is on, it's really
when he has
true.
The thing about YouTube, like, it's not on at a certain time, it's just on. Yeah.
And Netflix and, you know, and Amazon Prime now, too. Like, it's less and less of an issue, and I can understand how this would be a big problem if you were working in a network. If you were in that position for real, that would really be a challenge and something that you would be having a hard time dealing with. Him when he was talking about like, we're just gonna scare people and just like so they have no idea what's happening, like obviously the part that you clipped is more cartoonish, but all I was thinking about is like, oh, that's what NBC did with Hannibal. Like, they were just like, you know, what, fuck it, like, this is not our brand, but we're gonna do it anyway, and it's, you know, paying off.
Someone probably jumped on a table at some point during that green light process.
It was probably Brian Fuller, and so yeah, he was a problem. And I also love the bit about the bees, because that reminded me too of like, that's what slow TV is that we keep hearing about, that like in Scandinavia they're like, and now 6 hours of knitting, and people fucking watch it because they can't get enough. The other thing I wanted to talk that I mentioned, that another moment from earlier in the season that sort of speaks to what I was talking about, where they were like just getting super duper specific, is there's a scene where they're watching tape of people auditioning for some show, and the head of comedy, that's a really sour faced blonde.
Oh,
I can't remember her name, and the dark haired
Daisy
guy.
Haggard is the actress.
Yeah, Daisy Haggard. And Carol are all watching, and the things that they're coming out with, like, to neg these people are so good. It's like, she's smart. She's too smart. Like, it was just like, you can imagine that exact meeting happening daily. And again, it's like super duper specific, and that's what makes it, you know, interesting and great and smart. It took until you going through this episode for me to realize that this whole thing was engineered by Merck. Somehow it totally it went totally over my head that this was Merck's revenge on Matt LeBlanc for sleeping with his wife all of season 2.
Totally,
which it never, until this moment, that was when I realized all of this was 100% Merck's great Korean movie
long-term
style.
Old
boy Merck, exactly. Other than the Caster part, which, as you say, this is where they dispatch him, so yes. And I really like episodes, and I hope that they continue to make it even more inside baseball-y, as you say, in season 4, which there will be one. And I hope they change the credits, because that's the worst thing about the show.
Oh, the credits.
The credits are really bad.
Yeah, they are.
Dave.
I agree with everything you say. I just want to say that if we had a season canon, no, I would say no, because of Caster. He's so out of place and he's so off tone with the rest of the show.
It's just a shame, because I really like that actor.
Yeah, and if you just watch this episode on its own, not having watched the rest of it, it kind of feels okay. Like, he is crazy, but you know, the payoff's there. The payoff's not really worth the other whatever episodes that he's in and yeah. everything he does. But if you sort of isolate this episode, and Nick, well done.
this is his first rodeo.
Yeah. He's not so bad. But if you've seen the whole season, you're like, man, that was an interesting bracket bad choice.
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels like this episode they're kind of apologizing for what they totally. Did with him and acknowledging that it was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. But they did send him off well. The fucking bees thing was great. Like it's not enough to excuse Caster as a character, but it's still a pretty good send-off. I do like this show a lot, and I think, Tara, you're right that it sort of found its footing definitely later on in the series. It was kind of generic, you know, kind of Hollywood. It was sort of like, well, let's do the TV version of The Player. Mm. And, you know, they just kind of threw a whole bunch of stuff and you know, see what sticks. And it didn't really feel true. And even, like, our limited, like, interaction with
very
this world.
Very limited.
Yeah, but we had a taste of it a long time ago. Yeah. And even that was right. Like, the whole thing about how a project can accelerate from 0 to 100 in a minute or just, you know, die instantly. Like, it seemed very real, you know, like the whole thing about, you know, you're saying about how they're nagging people or, mm-hmm. you know, somebody comes in on a project, leaves on a project, you know, how you power play, all this stuff like seemed very real. And I really love Matt LeBlanc in this role. I really love that he is very willing to take the piss.
He really has no vanity. It's true.
Yeah. And he's not necessarily, you know, coming off great all the time. In fact, most of the time he comes off as kind of a dick. And it really works. And I think this episode is definitely one of the strongest ones and the most sort of like inside Hollywood-y. And I think that's the show's strength. And I hope in season 4 they play more up to it.
Now I'm very interested to hear what Sarah thinks, because I bet this is the first episode you've ever seen.
It is. They had me at Beverly wearing a Bowden top, which I'm sure you also noticed, Tara.
Of course, obviously.
I own that same top in brown. Yeah. You also know me and humor involving bees and the word bees repeated a billion times. And then that one guy, I mean, it's cheap, but the one sort of middle-aged guy being like, do they have a talent? Like,
yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's perfect. Like, they like used every rule of comedic writing and like everybody hit their marks. And I have only seen this one episode. So that guy's flame out was like, it existed outside of anything for me. So it wasn't like, okay, I'll tolerate it because he's leaving. It was like, that's hilarious. Yeah. And now he's like, you know, at Rancho Mirage rehab. Great. I also loved, I mean, the cup rant was brilliant, like perfectly constructed, perfect length. And her, that actress's inflections, like just her constant, very British exasperation that when she's like, it's like waking up from a coma because all this stuff is going on. She doesn't know about it.
Yeah.
And then that one exchange they have, which like the comfort of those two actors, like as actors and partners, is so funny that they're packing up, I guess, their office. And she's like, ugh, this is the worst room I've ever been in. And he's like, and we've been in Anne Frank's house. And then they're both like, ah. And I was like, that's just so, like, yeah. Sometimes you just get used to, like, whatever, the TV version of marriage that's funny. Mm-hmm. And you don't see actual, like, I don't know. You don't see actual like couples that seem like actual couples and not like boom-tsh couples
having car talk.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that was great. And I was glad that they left and I was glad that someone called at the end. It was really perfect. She's like, it's so wet here. I'm so frizzy. It's great. Ring. Yeah, it was really fun. And you know, I got the feeling having not seen any of the other episodes, but I did get the feeling that this is like all the things that the show does well, kind of in one place. So
yeah,
I think that's a great canon pick because it's not just quality. It's like, is this, you know, typical of the show and why the show is good? So
I would say that if you haven't seen the show, it's not the worst idea if you start with this episode and then go back. And by the time you catch up, maybe series four will be ready.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I'm usually not into the whole, you know, artificial, you know, skip forward, skip back thing. But in this case, DIY it. And it's not the worst thing that you could do. And I certainly think you would get a taste of the series for sure from this episode. And then kind of go back to the start.
Well, also, if you're going to start Sleepy Hollow, it's only fair.
Yeah. Sarah, also Gunner from Nashville, is one of the kids on the show within the show.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah. All right. So let's put it to a vote. I'm going to say yes, Tara.
I'm going to say yes and also say it's probably about time for Susan Sarandon to start thinking about doing a TV show. She's getting to be that age.
What's that mean?
Because she's like getting into her anchoring a Showtime.
Because nobody's giving her film
roles?
No,
just because, like, this, like, when you get to be a woman of a certain age, it's what you do. Like, Laura Linney and, you know.
Glenn Close and Damages.
Exactly.
That kind of thing.
Exactly.
Sarah?
She can be on Nashville as Tandy and Raina's mom, who actually isn't dead.
Ooh, that's a brilliant idea.
And since you're totally voting yes on that, I'm going to vote yes on episodes. This is really fun. Thanks, Nick.
All right. Thank that you. Means, Nick, you got 3 for 3. Episode, season 3, episode 9, episode 9. You're hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it's time for Winner and a Loser of the Week. Sarah has our winner.
Actually, I think the winner is me for that casting idea. I'm not joking.
Yeah, that's
I would start
really
watching
good.
The show again.
Totally.
I would get
Sarah
back into
Bunting.
It.
What is she
what
doing
is she
here?
Doing here?
Yeah. My actual submission is True Detective, which announced the casting of its leads for Series 2. Colin Farrell is a corrupt detective and Vince Vaughn is a career criminal. I would have been pretty psyched about either of these, but I'm especially psyched for both of them. I don't think they've ever worked together, and I think this role, as long as Vince Vaughn isn't like, whatever, the kooky career criminal who's trying to get Christine Taylor to love him and is actually like a legit career criminal, and it's a little darker and it makes him do something besides the same swingersy bullshit he's been doing for 20 years, I'm into it.
Yeah, I think he's really underrated as an actor. As I said on Skype and in my internet work note about this casting, which is like, he's made some easy choices because why wouldn't you? And,
sure.
You know, this is interesting and will, I hope, remind people that he actually is good.
Delivery Man didn't do it for you?
I'm waiting for that one to come on HBO, I guess.
Loser of the Week?
Loser of the Week, Rob Schneider, was supposed to star in an ad campaign for State Farm, but there was an outcry about him representing any kind of brand that has anything to do with people's health and safety because he is a noted anti-vaxxer. So he lost that part.
He is?
Yeah.
Not Schneider.
Kristen
Cavallari was one thing.
Like,
I know,
you can
seriously.
Be an anti-vaxxer or you can be that short, but not both. I don't know. Is that just me?
No, it's not just you. Why make more hassle for yourself? You're really right.
Oh, God.
But anyway, yeah, loser of the week, missing out on an insurance ad payday.
Oh, dear. I got a question for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what time it is?
Time to go to the hub of the universe?
Incorrect.
What?
Oh.
It is time for a very special game time. All right, everybody. This is the fourth game time of the season. The standings are Tara's on top with 2 points, valued guests at 1 point, and Sarah in the basement with 0. Remember, the season goes to 5 to 5. Today, we are playing Vanity Fair, an audio quiz that will challenge your knowledge of the networks, production companies, and distribution companies that make TV happen.
Oh, boy.
Ooh.
I will play you the audio from a vanity card, and you tell me whose vanity card that is.
Oh,
there are some easy ones here. There are some hard ones here. We have 30. So let's throw it to Picky 3000 to see who will start us off.
We will start with valued guest.
All right, so let's go guest, then Tara, and then into New York with Sarah. Are we ready to play Vanity Fair?
You bet.
Here you go, Nick. You may ask for a repeat.
That's just NBC.
I'm happy to
play
it again for you. I'm sorry, what was the answer?
Is that just NBC?
NBC Universal, that's good enough. We'll give it to you. All right, Tara.
Yeah. 20th Century Fox.
That's good. Sarah, are you ready?
Yes.
Two possible answers for that one.
Yeah. And I don't know which one. I think this is wrong, but ABC?
That was Columbia or Sony Pictures. Sony.
God damn it.
All right, Nick.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, can I have it again?
Sorry.
Oh, is that John Stewart's Busboy Productions?
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Good. All right, Tara.
Can you play it again? Is it like Lou Grade or something like that? Damn.
That's a Viacom production.
Oh.
Dang.
Yeah. All right. Sarah.
Yes. Da, na, 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 na. Can you play it again? Oh my God, I've heard it a million times.
Yep.
Yeah.
You've heard most of these a million times. The
yeah.
trick is to place them. I'll play it one more time for you.
Dick Wolf Productions.
That is Touchstone Television.
Oh, that's not what I thought at all.
All right, so we're back to Nick.
Okay.
Here's your third.
Wow.
Sounds like this predates me.
You want to hear it again, Nick?
Yeah, sure. No, I'll just guess a random old-timey one. MTM.
Incorrect. I know this one from, I believe, The Muppet Show.
That's what I... Yeah.
Yeah, it's ITC Entertainment. ITC Entertainment.
It's a deep cut.
All right. Tara.
Yeah. Play again. Oh, I know.
Yeah,
it.
I know you think you know it.
I do know it, but I don't know it. I don't know.
William Street.
Yeah.
They make a lot of the Cartoon Network Adult Swim shows.
Yeah, I knew it.
All without the visual, it's tough.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sarah.
Yep. Bow, bow. Bow, bow. Papa. Oh, shit. I don't know.
Dozer.
Oh.
That's Scrubs and...
It's Bill Lawrence.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I never would have gotten that.
All right. Nick?
Yeah. Oh, Is that like David E. Kelly?
No.
Braniff Entertainment.
Yeah.
It's Trey Parker and Matt Stone's.
Oh, well. Okay.
So they bought the rights to an old airline, and that's their actual, like, publicity real thing
well,
or something like that, right?
The visual is, but the music is the opening.
It's
from
the Cannibal,
the musical.
The musical. Yeah. Oh. All right, Tara?
Yeah. Shh. Gracie?
Whoops. Correct. Gracie Films. You were correct. All right. Sarah? Oh, Sarah got the cat one.
Oh, MTM?
Yeah.
Well, I'm pressing the wrong one all day.
That was... Damn it, Dave.
There you go. That
correct,
was correct. I am sorry. And that brings us into our first score break, brought to you by the old scary Paramount.
That is old and scary. This is a tight one. Sarah has one, and Nick and I are tied with two each.
Okay, great. All right, so we're back to Nick.
Settle down, vanity card.
It's still going.
Wow, yeah, that must be from the older era of longer show lengths. I have no idea.
Want to hear it again?
Sure. Oh, I don't know. I'll guess, what's his name? I don't know.
That was
bailed on your own premise.
Friends Across the Pond. That's the BBC.
Oh.
BBC. Oh. All right. So we're going to go to Tara.
Yeah.
Wow.
Is that like Saban Entertainment or something like that?
Let's hear it again. And you got to imagine the little cue there is a little hip check animation during it. That is the old Harpo Entertainment.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Oh, I would have gone with Carol Burnett, but okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Sarah, I think you might know this one. Might know this one. So I just want to say when I said, hey, Sarah, it activated Siri on my phone. So I'm just going to turn off my phone. So here's that cue for you again, Sarah. Any idea of that one?
Disney Television.
Ooh. Sesame Workshop.
I was thinking like Workshop. SpongeBob.
Yeah, close. All right, so we're back to Nick.
Oh, okay. Wait, this one I do. Can I have it one more time?
You may.
Oh, that's Castle Rock.
Yeah, I was going to say Sarah knows that one.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or Tara.
Mm-hmm. Is that the new less scary Paramount?
That is old Universal.
Oh.
The MCA era Universal with the, just the yellow letters on the planet background.
Yep.
All right. Here you go, Sarah.
Not a doctor. Shh. Not a doctor. Shh.
Shit.
You definitely know this one.
No, I know. I've seen it a million times.
I'm going to give you a hint.
My mind is emptied of words. Okay. Carsey Werner.
Tara's most hated vanity card.
I hate it! It's Dan Gore Productions, but he's the Brooklyn Nine-Nine guy.
Yeah, it's Dr. Gore. Dr. Gore Productions is the actual name of it.
It's such a dumb, corny, stupid cartoon.
All right, we're motoring through this. This one's for you, Nick.
Lorimar?
Love that guess.
A Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My second guess was going to be Filmation, but then.
Tara.
Missed it even.
Ready?
Yep.
That is old.
Oh, God.
You can almost see the glowing CBC? Neon stuff in that one.
Yeah.
No, incorrect. That was Public Broadcasting System.
I almost said that. Yeah. Damn it.
All right, Sarah. Sarah, what's that one?
TriStar?
Good guess. You're in the right neighborhood. That was Paramount, the original Paramount, not the old scary Paramount.
Oh, okay. Jeez.
Ominous. Do you know what that one is, Nick? Do you need to hear it again?
Ooh, no, I don't think I need to hear it again because I definitely have no idea what that is.
Metal Drum Productions.
Nope, that is Mark 7, kind of a famous old one. I think it was used in Dragnet. I think it was, what's the guy from Dragnet? Jack Webb? Does that ring a bell?
Yeah. Yes.
I think it's his production company.
Huh.
But that's the one where he chisels in Roman numeral 7 into the rock.
And, okay.
Yeah. All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Tough one.
Oh, duh, MGM.
That's good for a point. Sarah, another tough one.
Oh, Static. That's HBO.
That it is. All right. So, Here we go. Everybody has two questions left. Nick, tough one for you. Probably outside of your interests and your experience.
Arg.
Oh, boy.
Arg.
Well, I'm just going to have to take a stab in the dark because that sounds like the kind of sound a mutant enemy might make.
Indeed it does. Indeed it does. And that is correct. Tara.
Rick, move your head. Rick, move your head.
Brett, move your head? I don't know. I have no idea.
Did you say Brett?
That's what I thought I heard.
Yeah, it's Greg. Greg, move your head, as in Greg Berlanti production.
Yeah, I heard Rick.
Of course.
So, yeah.
That was a muddy record there. All right, Sarah.
Yes.
Now, I just want to say, before you answer, if you don't get this right, it's going to affect our relationship forever.
That's fair, which is why I'm saying it's Ubu. Just kidding, Stephen J. Cannell, right?
Yeah!
Yes, correct. All right, so here's everybody's last. Everybody's last. So, Tara, give me the scores again, as they stand right now.
Okay, now Sarah and I are tied with 3 each, and Nick has 4.
Ooh, okay, so it's Paramount theme. Next to lose. Nick, are you ready?
Yep. Oh, it sounds so iconic and
I like to think that you know, when they bring in all the like orchestra, you know, day players or whatever for this, and they just come in and they're playing this
play
6 second thing, and they leave.
See you next week.
I packed up my cello for this.
Oh man.
Any guess?
CBS.
Close.
ABC?
ABC Studios, yeah. That's when they make their own shows. That's them what's plays. It's the one where it's like all the camera people in silhouette.
Oh, right. Yep.
All right, so Tara, here's yours.
Oh, Disney. No?
Buena Vista.
Ah!
Right company, wrong
Disney's
name.
Little brother.
Disney's non-union Mexican counterpart, Buena Vista. All right. So, Sarah. So
this is your chance to tie it up.
Here you go. Now, if you don't know it, you might want to think what's not been said and take a stab in the dark. Mm. But here's the cue once again.
Warner Brothers.
Yay!
I was thinking that one was CBS. But
no!
Does that mean we have a tie?
You do, and I'm not in it!
All right, so, Nick, Sarah.
Yes.
I have one more left. I will play it for you. Shout out if you know it, and if it sounds like a tie to me, that means Sarah wins, because Sarah's got a bit of a delay.
Right.
So I'll keep that in mind. I kind of got a feel for the delay now, so I will be arbiter of the delay. All right. Ready, Nick?
Yeah.
Ready, Sarah?
Yep.
Here we go. I want the full name.
Dick Wolf Productions.
Sarah, do you know what it is?
Oh, no, I said it wrong.
Wolf, the full name?
Well, Dick Wolf Productions was really wrong. I mean, not really wrong. I mean, it's... give me a guess. Forget what I said. Obviously, we heard a wolf.
If she doesn't know...
Your answer, please.
Dick Wolf TV.
Can I have another chance?
Wait. All right, now, hang on.
Nick Wolf.
Hang on. You didn't get it. So now I have to figure out what the hell I'm going to do now, because we have a tie. And I thought, Sarah, you would have got that right away, even if Nick didn't. The answer we were looking for was Wolf Films.
Yeah.
So we have a tie. So guess what that means, guys? You both get a point.
Yay!
And this is going to be interesting.
Yes.
I love it.
All right.
That made it all worthwhile.
Dig it.
That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We discussed whether Gotham was the pilot we deserved but not the one we needed before we went around the dial with stops at The Flash, Hedda Gagamwa, and what was yours, Sarah?
Good Wife.
Good Wife and Chicago PD. Liv reported as much as she could on Face Off Scary Childhood Fear Clown episode, while Tara explained why we are all Domer for having watched Under the Dome this episode and this season. Nick successfully pitched us the Season 3 Episode 9 episode called Episode 9 of Episodes for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Nick and Sarah were the winners of this week's Vanity Card Game Time. Aww. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariana.
I can never find gum in this utility belt.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Bees.
And Nick Reinwell Jones.
Oh, it's Harvey Dent's first day at Little League.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Sit, Ubu, sit.
There. Good dog. It is.